Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and most U.S. adults, about 56% of those surveyed by Pew last year, now say it is not necessary to believe in God to be moral and have good values. But about a quarter of American adults say that although they're not religious, they identify as spiritual. They fall into a category that demographers like to call nuns. That's not those Catholic religious women. That's N-O-N-E-S, those who answer none of the above on religious identification surveys. So where do these spiritual nuns turn for guidance? Joining me now to talk about her personal quest to find spiritual guidance in some unconventional ways that you may relate to, and we'll hear some of your stories, is Anjali Kumar, attorney and now author of Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. Welcome to WNYC, Anjali.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your journey really began when your daughter was born and your father asked you, as you tell it in the book, if you would be taking her to temple. At home, you grew up in the ancient Indian religion of Jainism, but you attended Catholic school for many years. By the time you were an adult, you identified as religiously unaffiliated, a nun, so to speak. So just putting some of your background in a nutshell there, why do you think you drifted from your parents' religion?
It's interesting because I think the religion that I was raised with, to me, was really my culture. So Jainism, Hinduism was the culture that I was surrounded with. It was reflected in the foods that I ate and the holidays that I celebrated and all the rest of it. So it was something that I never really questioned or had to think too much about because it was all around me. It was just seamlessly integrated into my life, even though I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and went to Catholic school. And I just never really thought about what it really, really meant until I had my daughter now 8 years ago nearly and realized that someday she would be asking me life's big questions, things like, what happens when you die? How do you find happiness? All those sorts of things for which religion was often what people turned to answer those questions. And since I had never really thought about what I believed in answer to those questions, I just realized I needed to do a search on my own to figure them out.
And so your book chronicles your attempts to answer those questions that, in your words, you can't Google an answer to for your daughter. And listeners, are you religiously unaffiliated but consider yourself spiritual or a seeker? What sorts of journeys have you been on? Have you tried any unconventional religious practices on your quest to find answers to the questions like, what is the meaning of life? Tweet us at Brian Lehrer or call in 212-433-WNYC as we hear some of Anjali Kumar's stories, 212-433-9692. It does look like you skipped the big box religions in this church. You didn't try the Catholic Church and then Reform Judaism and, Islam, right?
Yes, I did not. I definitely avoided the big box religions, as you said, altogether, partly because I was raised with a few of them around me, whether it was Hinduism or going to Catholic school. So I feel like I had an idea of what those religions had on offer. And I also did a bit of religious studies in college. I went to Brown back in the early 90s and had, explored some of those through that time as well. So I felt like I had an idea of what those religions had on offer. And I realized I wasn't necessarily searching for a specific religion at the end of the day. I was really looking for answers to those types of questions that I couldn't Google an answer to. Ironically, I was working at Google at the time that I had my daughter and was setting out on this search. But I just didn't feel like those places were the places to look.
Working at Google and setting out on a search. There's definitely a book in that.
Yeah.
And so the first story in the book is a trip you take to Brazil where you meet with somebody called John of God, a man who claimed an ability to channel saints, doctors, and scientists in order to heal people, even though he definitely doesn't have the medical license to do so. What piqued your interest in John of God? Why travel all that way for something that sounds kind of like a ripoff?
So he doesn't charge for it once you get down there, actually. So there wasn't that cost. There was obviously time and expense of going down to Brazil, taking time away from my job, taking time away from my family. But I was curious. I heard about him. I had read a bit about him. Ultimately, Oprah went down there. So I feel like that validates everything. But or maybe not, depending on your perspective. But
she has a book club and a prayer club.
I know. I guess. Oprah, if you're listening. Going down there, I think there was just something interesting about the idea that so many people were seeking answers and going to someone in the middle of nowhere, Brazil, taking this huge long flight, you know, if they're coming from America, some people were just driving locally, obviously, and seeking answers and seeking help. And so that initial journey kind of set me off on this larger journey, but just going down there, trying to see if, you know, if I can make three wishes to a genie in a bottle and his name is John of God, would he have the answers to those questions?
And you traveled to Peru to find a shaman who could offer you a, quote, direct route to God through ayahuasca, a brew with psychoactive effects that's traditionally used in spiritual medicine ceremonies among some of the indigenous people in that area. DMT is sometimes referred to as the God molecule. How did that experience go?
Well, and without giving away too much of the book for your listeners, it did not go well. I went down without a real shaman hookup, as it turns out, and I sort of stumbled my way through Cusco and ended up walking into what amounted to a tourist shop for spiritual journeys and the like. They sold herbs, they sold all sorts of things, and they did ayahuasca journeys. And I had a conversation with the shamans that were present and started off by doing sort of a shortcut to doing a journey, because there's a whole prep that you're supposed to do of about a month of a diet of various things that you're supposed to eliminate and meditate and do all these things in preparation for such a ceremony. And I hadn't done any of it. So they gave me a bit of a shortcut, which was I could drink volcanic water and cleanse myself and sort of remove all the toxins from my body. And after a few hours of throwing up and pooping, I realized maybe this wasn't the best approach to spirituality, at least not the right one for me.
And I'll ask you about one more before we take some calls and get to maybe some of your larger conclusions. Much closer to home than the last story, you visited SoulCycle, a gym that offers spin classes and that has, as some listeners know, sort of a cult-like following. It's almost fair to say. Did you really go to SoulCycle to find God?
I went to SoulCycle to find something, and I wasn't quite sure what I would find. I went, you know, I'd heard so much about it. There's a gym right in Tribeca, near where I lived, and it is a bit of like church and the gym. It's sort of, you know, it's really creating community. And I think a lot of what I realized on this journey is that so much of what people are seeking is community. And so maybe it wasn't that wild to think of a place like SoulCycle, not necessarily the most obvious choice of a place to find spirituality, that it might have something to offer.
And what did you take away from that experience?
It's a very difficult workout, and I am really out of shape and in much need of a gentler, kinder workout to start out.
So you got more physically in shape than spiritually in shape.
I don't think you would call what I got into physical shape from that experience, but I definitely did not get spiritually in shape.
Brian in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how you doing? Great show. Always enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm religiously unaffiliated. I'm what you'd call a lapsed Catholic, child of the 60s. And I've sort of over the years embraced some of the ideas around Buddhism. I know I'm kind of a cliche in that way. I mean, I'm not so unusual. But I've also raised two children to be sort of heathens, or a friend of mine just used this expression, spiritual freelancers. But I really, the idea of community is, that's been a little difficult for me to find like-minded people to kind of share a belief system. So really appreciate your guest.
Brian, thank you very much. And I think this comes up a lot. Among people who are kind of on an individual spiritual journey. They may find wisdom in different books. They may find solace or positive experiences in meditation or other practices. Finding community among what he called spiritual freelancers is really hard.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I love that term, spiritual freelancers. I might have to steal that from you. That's a really good one. But yeah, I think it is really hard. And I do think so much of the root of what we are all seeking is that that community, especially in a place like New York City, where a lot of us don't have family, you know, or transplants from somewhere else. And so we don't have those roots and those communities that we might otherwise have. If I had grown up in India and stayed, you know, stayed there, that I would have had been surrounded by that. And so New York can be very isolating in that way. So I think a lot of it is seeking community.
Have you thought about or written about why there are so many nuns, none of the above in religious terms, in America today? It's the fastest growing segment of the population in religious terms. It's sort of Christian and then nun and then everything else. Of course, Christian is a huge category, and there are subdivisions within that that have changed over time, etc. But nun is really expanding, none of the above.
Yeah, you know, I can only speak to my own experience since I'm not a religious scholar by any stretch of the imagination. So I'd be speaking out of turn if I tried to tell you why that was happening with any real evidence behind it. But in my own personal experience, I think it's possibly because a lot of the dogma out there doesn't really suit what we know to be true about other things, that it's okay to believe something different from your neighbor, and that doesn't make one of you right or wrong necessarily when it comes to these types of questions.
Russell in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Russell.
Hi there. How are you, Brian?
Good. How about you?
Good. I'm doing real well. Thanks for your guest, too. She's very, into this. I'm Cherokee, so my religion is Ketua. Now, what we believe in is we believe in the sun as grandfather and the earth as grandmother. Without the sun, nothing would grow on the earth. And, of course, birth comes from the earth. We also believe that everything that we need is provided already. We don't need to ask for anything from the so-called God. But we do believe in a creator, but the creator is not the Son of God. And also, it's just, you know, we believe in that. We think it's, you know, our religion is we believe in ourselves, and we have a medicine priest, and he is the carrier of the message, but you have to be an elder to do that, and I'm an elder, so, you know, I carry the message, and that's just about it, Brian. Thank you.
Russell, can I ask you a question? What do you think about people who were not raised Cherokee like you were and come looking for something, you know, as spiritual freelancers, and maybe seeking to find some of it in your community?
Well, if they come to our community, you know, they have a chance to, you know, walk around the spiritual fire and, you know, try to talk to other people, share with the medicine priest. We do accept anybody who wants to come on into our community because we're open to that. As far as, you know, if they're nuns and they don't really believe in anything, well, they can come here and we'll talk to you about what we do. And, you know, you have a chance to try to see, you know, what we're doing and how we're doing it. And, you know, it really does move you. Like, I'll just give one quick example. We have a ceremony called Octahuna, which means we form a circle and we go like around the sun, and we go to each person and we ask the person for forgiveness for anything that we might have caused them, any pain, any suffering, anything like that. And I got to tell you, after you pass 25 people, you're crying like a baby, and so is the person you're talking to, and each person has a chance to move forward around the circle. So by the time it's all done, it takes quite a while. I hope that answers your question, but yeah, it's they can come, and they can certainly be part of what we offer. As far as freelancer is concerned, most people that come there that are non-native are freelancers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what's the best part of it, because they get a chance to listen to us and do that. Some people walk away and don't ever come back. Other people stay for a while and then they leave. And other people like myself, we stay all the time because we believe in what's going on there. We believe that the creator is the creator, and it's probably some, you know, it's a spiritual thing. It's like when you die, we feel that the energy in your body goes up and joins the rest of the spirits that are there. And right. then when you come back, you could be a plant or an animal or whatever. So that's pretty much what I would say.
Thank you so much, Russell. We really appreciate your call. And you did have, you write about in the book, some of your experiences with Native American indigenous religions, right? Indigenous.
It was more in Mexico. I went to a Temescal that, you know, they have similar traditions in some of the native cultures. But I went to a Mexican version of that, in the Yucatan.
We'll continue with Anjalee Kumar and more of your calls in a minute. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we continue with Anjalee Kumar, author of Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. So a major part of religion is the idea of cultural markers, like instructions for how to mark major life events that can be overwhelming to individuals who, you know, don't come with their own rituals and roadmaps. As most people don't. Every religion has a way to celebrate a birth, a marriage, to mourn the dead. When you're functioning as a nun of the above, do these things get lost?
I think they could. Luckily, I come from that cultural background of just being Indian. So between Jainism and Hinduism, I've got. You can draw on those. Yeah, I got a lot. You know, there's a lot to pull from. So the thing that set me off on the journey, as you mentioned at the top, was my father asking me that question when my daughter was first born of, you know, have you taken her to the temple yet? And I was like, what? Did I miss something? Was I supposed to do something? And I was ready to do whatever, you know, cultural markers, whatever religious things I needed to do to mark her birth, to celebrate her birth, to welcome her into the world. So I did have that. I had a Hindu wedding. You know, we've got all those cultural markers on top.
Since the birth of your daughter was kind of the hook for the book and the inspiration for the particular spiritual journeys that you chronicle, how old is she now, and how are you raising her, spiritually speaking?
She is 7, going on 18, and she is a ton of fun. I am raising her, you know, to be a non-absolutist, really. I mean, so really going back to my Jain roots of non-absolutism, but also really with the same cultural traditions that my husband and I were both raised in. So he's Indian as well, he's Hindu. And so between those two, just those are kind of the markers. She's learning Hindi, she eats Indian food, all that sort of stuff. But then,
so those are the cultural markers.
Yeah,
for sure. Has she asked you, is there a God?
She has. And when I couldn't give her an answer, she actually picked up my sister's iPhone and asked Siri. And it will be a fun game for your listeners to do the same and see what comes up.
Huh. Yeah. So you would call yourself an agnostic since you couldn't give her an answer?
Ooh. The jury's still out.
That's the definition of agnostic,
exactly.
Isn't it? David in Chinatown, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I teach martial arts in Chinatown for 20 years, and I'm pretty much part of the Chinese community. I'm not born Chinese. I'm American from a non-practicing Jewish family.
Mm-hmm.
And all my life I've been doing martial arts, and at this point for the last 20 years, it's become a place where people come to not only do physical exercise, but we also have a community. We go out and have tea afterwards and dim sum, this kind of thing. So, and we do meditate, though there is no intellectual component. I don't really talk about it, just do it as a way of calming down the mind and concentrating and focusing. So there's no overt religiosity to it, but there is a community, and I just wanted to share my story.
David, thank you very much. That's a good one. So he's in Chinatown. One of the lower Manhattan stories in your book is that you attended a potluck dinner with Wiccans in the West Village. Talk about your Wicca experience.
I did. So that was one of the more surprising experiences. I think it was the one that I went into with the most misinformation because I didn't know very much about Wicca. And what I did know was largely based on pop culture or from cartoons or that kind of thing, and just like really bad misrepresentations of what it meant to be Wicca, to be a Wiccan. And going to that particular potluck dinner, it was one of the more eclectic gatherings that I've been to say the least, but one of the most welcoming group of people that I've ever met. Everybody was so lovely and kind and generous with their spirit, with their humor, with their time, with their vulnerability in that experience. And, you know, to a group of largely strangers, we had a delicious meal, and I did not add to the culinary delights of that meal terribly well, but the other folks were really good cooks in the room.
What is Wiccan cuisine?
Well, I don't know that I can quantify it. I think everyone it was like a potluck. So everybody brought there was kale salad.
Whatever. There were traditional foods.
No, not that I identified. I think it was, there was kale on the menu. It was a group of New York Wiccans. So.
It was Lower Manhattan.
Exactly.
They ate kale.
Exactly.
And maybe by way of segue, Carrie in Northern Colorado, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
Speaking of Wiccans, I was actually raised Catholic, but now I'm a very devoted, what I would call a goddess-oriented pagan, which includes Wicca. I've studied Wicca, but I'm not committed to that as a path, but I do practice a lot of a kind of a buffet of different pagan and metaphysical practices, including witchcraft. And it's just been... I've been doing this, you know, it's sort of been there in my life since I was a child, but I didn't know it was an official thing. I didn't know that this was a spiritual path that was available to me until like the last 5 years or so. And since this spiritual awakening, as I call it, I've actually moved away from a full-time career in academia as a historian, and I'm starting a business as a mentor and teacher to women on alternative spiritual paths.
Well, where were you 7 years ago? No, I'm just kidding. That's amazing. Actually, your story sounds so similar to one of the stories that I tell in the book about a woman who I called Mary, and I think you'll enjoy reading it.
So you said you're a goddess-oriented pagan.
Yes.
That's the new GOP. Which Northern Colorado...
I don't know if I go that far, but...
Northern Colorado could use a new GOP from what I've heard.
Yeah, I think a lot of us could.
GOP.
Exactly.
Carrie, thank you so much. Let's see. Can we do one more? How about Andy in South Orange? Andy, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello. I get a little nervous talking on the air, but I thought this would be an important thing to put into the mix. I recommend the Unitarian Universalist Church. I myself am a member out in Summit, and the reason I think it's good for spiritual freelancers is there's no dogma. You can believe in God, you cannot believe in God. Each person, there's no dogma. There are just seven principles that I think are very easily endorsed by most people with a liberal mind, like honoring the environment, honoring each person as important. And one of the principles is that each person is encouraged to seek their own spiritual truths. So the reason I think it's good is that you have your individual pursuit, but you also are embraced by a lovely community of very welcoming and very supportive people. And there are congregations all throughout the metropolitan area. I am not on the board.
Do you consider Unitarianism Christian?
Well, its background, it says, is in the Judeo-Christian tradition. I think it branched off of Christianity. But at this point, I guess it's more closely allied with Christianity. My minister would probably smack me around because I don't have the, I'm not that well versed in it.
But Andy, forgive me, but the show is about to end, so I'm going to leave it there with you and give our guest, Anjali Kumar, a last word. Where did all this leave you?
I've become very comfortable that this will be a set of questions that I will probably never have the answer to, because if there were an answer, I suspect Google would know the answer, but it does not. And I think at the end of the day, all of these things are different routes to the same destination, and everyone's looking for health, happiness, and love.
And it is a process.
Yeah.
Jesus said it's the way. And that's what a seeker does, is seek, right? Anjali Kumar's book is called Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having me.